Bits Blacker, Gold Bits Blacker, Gold Bits Blacker, Gold Bits
Podcast, Podcast, Podcast.
Blacker, Gold Bits Blacker, Gold Bits Blacker, Gold Bits Blacker, Gold Bits
Podcast, 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 Podcast. Podcast, Podcast, Podcast.
Blackheart Gold Podcast, episode 44. It's a sad one. It's the end of Loss 3. It's the end of a Big Ten title run. It's the end of the season to some people. But not to us, for we are troopers or sadists, depending on how you want to look at it. Adam Jacoby joining yours truly, Patrick Vint. Jacoby, what's going on?
I don't know, man. This last loss to goddamn Northwestern, it's forced me to switch from a cocaine habit to a heroin habit. And I can understand why they call it heroin, because taking this drug is harrowing. I need help.
Wow. And this is taking a turn for the worse. This is like your Oscar campaign, isn't it? Like, this is one step in your EGOT.
Wait, what?
EGOT.
EGOT?
Do you watch 30 Rock?
No, I'm sorry.
Tracy Morgan's character is after an EGOT, which is an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony.
Oh, yeah. Okay, now I'm back with you.
You're for a podcast EGOT. This is your, like, sad, depressing movie
I'm flexing my chops now.
Well, there's not a whole lot of time for us to regroup, although we can discuss Northwestern at a later time and date, because it's Ohio State week, and as we all know, that means usually death and destruction for Iowa. Fortunately, we're joined by one of our favorite Ohio State bloggers, one Jeff Seaman. No, we're kidding. His name is Seaman. Worst fan from 11 Warriors, who has participated in all of our fantasy football and baseball leagues this year and is genuinely a pretty good guy. Worst fan, how you doing? Yeah, for an Ohio State fan, of course. Worst fan, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm Luke. You can call me by my Christian name. That's fine.
Can we go with Luke? Okay. Well,
Luke. I blog under a, non-gnome diplome, but that's okay. Fine.
His worst fan on Twitter, he's Luke on 11 Warriors. He is number one in our hearts.
I'm James in real life, but.
Now, Ohio State comes into this week off of kind of a somewhat harrowing experience against the Penn State Nittany Lions. Down at the half, and then in typical Ohio State fashion, storm back to cover the spread. Luke, for the Iowa fans who were too busy drowning in their own sorrow to see the game, what was the story of last week?
I don't know if anybody remembers the Anthony Morelli era, but essentially the second half just kind of devolved into that brand of the spread HD where the spread means, spreading asshole, basically.
Wow.
And we've got our Goatsy reference out of the way.
That wedding ring, man.
That's my favorite part. That's my favorite goddamn part of that picture. Somebody married him.
Yeah,
that was way before any gay marriage was legal in the country at all.
Yeah, when you go back and watch Mad Men season 4, I think in the second episode, the doctor that Dawn winds up dating says, like, well, don't worry, you'll be married in 3 months anyway, which is definitely, foreshadowing in a fucked up way that you don't know at the time. Goatee with the wedding ring, it's the same. Same fucked up shit. You don't want to see the second Goatsy. It's fucked up.
Wow. We have that explicit tag for a reason, folks. Ohio State enters at 9-1. Their one loss coming at Wisconsin, who looks to be a complete juggernaut despite their only loss to Michigan State, which is looking more and more like a fluke every week. Avoids Michigan State this year. But has beaten the tar out of Penn State, played a close but not as close as it looks game against Illinois, And the same with a game against Miami, where Miami kind of came back late. But kind of, is it, Luke, is this kind of playing out according to plan, or is this a bit of a disappointment this year?
Yeah, I mean, going into the season, I thought that everything was lined up pretty perfectly. I didn't think Wisconsin would be quite as strong as they were. I thought it'd pretty much come down to this game this Saturday. So, you know, obviously, you know, it's the conditioned douchebag, you know, Patriots, Yankees, Ohio State frontrunner kind of expectations, but I was obviously hoping for more. But, you know, at this point, you know, winning out and getting into a BCS bowl, or if, you know, God forbid, having to settle for like a Cap One type SEC potential, you know, monkey off the back type game, I'll definitely take that.
Luke, what's the story on Terrell Pryor's season? I know that there were a lot of expectations after the Rose Bowl last year, and he's had a good year. Has been mentioned as a Heisman Trophy front runner at times, although that kind of faded after the Wisconsin loss. But the offense is putting up points.
Yeah, the offense is I think leading the conference in scoring. Pryor is definitely having, I think statistically, his best year. He's completing more than 2/3 of his passes for the first time. Last year kind of saw a regression from his freshman year, where I think he was like 60-something percent down to the 50s, but this year he's about 67 or 68, I think, and he's the guy obviously has improved significantly, but he still tries to just, you know, throw the football through people. You know, maybe it's a PS3 conditioning thing, I don't know, but especially I remember a pick in the second half, or maybe the end of the first half against Minnesota, where he literally rolled out and just tried to chunk the football through a Minnesota defensive back's head. Like, that doesn't work in reality. You know, that's going to be a turnover or something comical every time. So he's improved. He's going to make plays that, you know, make you, you know, not second guess why he was so highly regarded coming out of high school. But he still will also just have complete, you know, I don't know, moments of sheer arrogance. I don't know if it's necessarily a brain fart. It's just, I think he thinks he can do, you know, divine godly shit that he can't necessarily pull off all the time, but he's been good enough. Definitely top three or so in the conference.
Where has he improved the most in your eyes?
You know, I think he's actually gotten worse on quick passes, like slants and stuff like that. He's actually kind of digressed, but I think his deep ball is a little bit better. I think that he actually goes through reads and progressions a lot more than he did in the past. I think that he just, his knowledge of the playbook, his knowledge of kind of, you know, the strengths and limitations of those around him has gotten pretty strong. The weird thing is that sometimes watching him, I don't know if it's just like the length of his stride or his gallop or whatnot, but you almost don't even feel like he's really trying sometime, which is kind of weird. But I just think that he's kind of, you know, he's definitely improved his ability to kind of make his reads or go through his, you know, A to B, B to C, C to D than, you know, a year or two ago.
Yeah, it does seem like the game is sort of, quote, slowing down for him, which is sort of usual in college. Okay, here's a scenario. Terrell Pryor rolls out of the pocket and tucks the ball in, and he has his eye on the first down marker. About what percentage of the time does he make it? And my guess is 100.
You know, if he's not dinged up or he's not, you know, hiding some mysterious ailment. I mean, I guess even last year at the end of the season, he played the final three games, I think, with, you know, just a floating, some sort of ligament in his knee, and didn't really slow him down too much. But yeah, I would say, like, I would err on the side of 90-95% of the time. There's weird times where he may make a weird cut inward, or he may, you know, I don't know, kind of try and force something passing right before he crosses the line of scrimmage. But yeah, if he wants to run it, he can usually make that happen. Weird thing is, he hasn't necessarily been. I think against Penn State, he only had 49 rushing yards and maybe like 8 or 9 carries. So I don't know if he's just trying to, you know, do that whole Troy Smith, you know, pocket passer evolution thing or what, but he hasn't been doing it as much as he had earlier in the season, I really feel like.
Luke, in looking at the statistics for Ohio State this year, the thing that struck me was that they haven't really spread the ball out that much throwing it. I mean, Stanzenbacher and Posey have more than half the receptions, the lion's share of the yards. I mean, between what I'm looking at right now, out of about 2,300 yards passing, they have about 1,400 yards receiving between the two of them. Has anybody tried to basically shut down the two receivers and make Ohio State, oddly enough, beat them on the ground?
Penn State did, and that didn't really work out for them. In the first half, they played really good coverage defense. Posey had kind of a fluky, just really remarkable adjustment to a deep ball. It was like a 30-40 yard reception in the early on, the first drive, I think, of the game even. But after that, they played about a half of perfect football where, you know, if you can really mask and shut down Sanzenbacher, who until that ridiculous deflection touchdown, I don't think had one in the game. Yeah. If you can get him and Posey kind of out of it, yeah, you know, it does become kind of a level of discomfort in a ways for Terrell Pryor. Now, I'm sure that Jim Tressel gets an absolute boner if you make him run the ball every single time. But Boom Heron is, I don't know, like, you know, he's drinking his EAS Myoplex or something because he's a different level this year. But, you know, I think that, yeah, that's probably your best bet is just if you're going to, you know, if you lose to Ohio State and Boom Heron's the guy that beats you, right? You know, you can just, whatever, Boom Heron beat you. Fuck, right? But, I think that, yeah, that's probably the strategy to do it. There's not the legitimate third receiver is, there's some guys that have some talent and some potential, but they're not there this year, certainly.
Well, your third receiver is probably Sane or Heron out of the backfield, right?
Yeah, the weird thing is, it's been kind of the, you know, well, Sane has sort of evolved into this weird, almost like H-back type position this year. He's not really carrying the rock near as much, even though I feel like the myth that he is no longer running the ball near as well is kind of overplayed. I think that the numbers aren't too dramatic, maybe like half a yard per carry or something like that difference, but Heron's just been a rock running the ball, so it's just kind of hard not to give him those carries. And there's some young guys, this Ohio State super fan or, you know, some of our commenters and whatnot will probably be like, getting Jamal Berry and third and fourth string running backs you've never heard of. And there's a reason you haven't heard of them. They're not anywhere near as ready as those top two guys. But, yeah, I think actually the reception yards for Heron are remarkably similar, if not, I don't want to say better than Sane. Sane's had more touches, but I think that Heron actually averages more yards per catch than Heron, than Sane. It's weird, but maybe Stoneburner, you know, everyone's favorite name. He's probably a pretty reliable third target. I don't know if the numbers justify that, but he's pretty sure-handed at the very least.
Now, you mentioned the fact that you know, Boom has been ungodly this year, and he really has been. I've watched a couple of games where he's just torched everybody in front of him. And you know, there are a couple other guys getting carries for him, but has there been any real adjustment in the offense this year from last year? I mean, I from what I see, it looks almost identical, and there hasn't been a whole lot of change other than the fact that they really haven't relied on the tight end at all. But is it your typical Ohio State run first, run second, and run third if you can?
You know, I think that they do. It's just typical Tressel in the last 2 years. Like, you know, the game plan against Oregon, they just came out and threw the whole game. And that, I'm sure, was why Oregon was partially caught off guard, despite having a pretty decent secondary for Pac-10 standards. You know, I don't ever begin to understand some of Jim Tressel's game plans. Some of them work, some of them don't work quite as well. You know, there's still that dimension if they have to go into the shutdown run mode when things get tough. Against Illinois, that's exactly what they did. They actually came out with a pretty aggressive passing attack to start the game, and then when things got a little bit iffy, and the wind was really strong in that game too, it was knocking down any medium and deep passes, but they can still kind of revert into that trestle ball mode. But I still think it's a pretty balanced attack. I think maybe initially too, Miami, I feel like that there was maybe an over-inclination to pass when Pryor didn't really have it that day. So I think that, you know, they'll mix it up. If the going gets tough, it's going to just be, you know, Boom, Boom, you know, maybe Sane, mostly Boom Heron for most of the game, maybe a prior scramble here and there, design quarterback carry, that kind of thing.
Do you think there's going to be any significant departure from Tressel's game plan from last year and how he approaches this? You know, don't make Pryor try to do too much. Let him, you know, find the weaknesses of the Iowa defense, usually over the middle, and just go from there.
I think he trusts Pryor a lot more than in the first two seasons. Year one to year two is a marked improvement, and 2 to 3 is also been he just lets him make, you know, he's going to let him make the mistakes. So at least initially, you know, maybe that's not going to be the case late in the game if it's tight again like it was last year. But I think that they will let him throw the ball. Now, that being said, I mean, I know you guys have, Greenwood and Prater both have a lot of INTs. I think I was looking this afternoon, they had like 3 or 4 each or something crazy like that. I guarantee you one of those guys is going to get a pick at some point, and that might be the turning point when Tressel kind of, you know, bats down the hatches and starts just running every play. But at least initially, it should be kind of a healthy mix, I would think.
Well, they get those picks because they're thrown at so often, and they're thrown at a lot because it usually works.
Yeah, Iowa's pass defense taking a giant step back this year, and that's been it was said in half jest, but I think Adam's exactly right. I mean, teams have basically decided we're not going to attempt to run the ball in Iowa. We'll just throw right at them, and no one has tried to stop anything aside from the occasional pick. But looking at Ohio State's defense, I mean, you know, I've been singing the praises of Wisconsin for a few weeks now, but looking at the pure numbers, if you had nothing else to look at than the stats, you would think that Ohio State was 47-0 this year. First in scoring defense, first in pass defense, second in rushing defense behind one Iowa Hawkeyes, first in turnover margin, first in total defense, first in pass defense efficiency. Is there anything that these guys haven't been particularly good at this year?
I think that this is a really weird, I don't want to sound arrogant or anything, but I think that they are almost too laid back kind of going into games sometimes. I think that's actually something that's been reflected in some of the press statements. I think that Posey and Pryor have both said this team is kind of too laid back or laissez-faire sometimes. Obviously not their words, but I think that they can get kind of complacent, and that's what happened. At the start of the Wisconsin game, they were almost too loose, and then when Wisconsin came out just, you know, firing, they were just like kind of, you know, shocked by what was happening, and they didn't really know how to respond until halftime. I know the big story du jour amongst beat writers is that Tressel supposedly, you know, rained down fire and brimstone at halftime of the Penn State game. Can you actually imagine Jim Tressel like giving a fiery pep talk? Because, you know, you guys are being inefficient. Like, well, I don't know how that would really go, but. I don't know. It's just I think that they can get kind of too lax because I know that they're really good and they're really sharp and they're kind of really comfortable in what they do with each other in terms of passing, running, the balance, and just the rhythm I think is real natural. Everyone has a good feel for everyone else. The O-line's finally kind of hit their stride in November, as happened last year too. I just think that, yeah, if they get too complacent, you know, that's when they can kind of get a little bit caught off guard. If they come in, I don't know, it's not cockiness or arrogance or anything like that. I think they just come in too relaxed. They won't play. They'll play a little bit too crisp. They won't play quite as loose as they need to be.
Coming into the season, the thought was that if there's anybody to, quote, challenge Adrian Claiborne as the best defensive lineman in the Big Ten, it was probably Cam Hayward. And while Claiborne has been, I mean, frankly, something of a disappointment this year, I haven't really heard anything about Cameron Hayward either. So what's your take on how the season's been going so far? And is it up to your expectations?
I think it is, excuse me, kind of the same sort of thing as Claiborne. I think that the high expectations, you know, another year gone by, has resulted in him not quite living up to those lofty expectations. But, you know, I think that overall, he's played solid. He does rotate a lot between end and tackle, so I don't know if that's accounting for some of it. I don't know if it's double teams. He hasn't been quite the force or factor that he has been in the last couple years, and both those guys will still probably be, you know, first, second-round picks at worst, probably high first-rounders. They're really talented guys, but, you know, when the opposing offense is game plan for an end, it can kind of nullify them in some ways. So I think that he's been fine. He hasn't been bad. But it's definitely been disappointing. I think on the offensive side of the ball, Posey has kind of underwhelmed in the same way. He hasn't broken out the way a lot of people thought he would.
On the special team side, oh, go ahead, Adam.
No, I was just going to say, so you're just chalking it up to offensive coordinators game planning around him more than anything?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it is the weight of expectations. Hayward is noted for his work ethic, so I don't know that he would get lazier, you know, pat himself on the back, especially when he came back for a senior year he didn't have to. I mean, it's possible that there, you know, some other degree of the hype has played up into those guys' heads, but, you know, I think that when you're accounted for that strictly, that sometimes, you know, it can result in maybe his play is really solid in terms of, you know, playing his gap and getting his man. I don't know. Just because he's not accumulating those sack numbers or those losses or tackles for a loss, it's easy to write them off. If he's not necessarily playing well, maybe that's not totally the case, you know.
Sure.
Now, on special teams, Luke, you know, Ohio State looks okay. Buchanan's been okay this year. Hasn't been the usual, you know, rocket-legged punter that, that Tressel loves to have for his typical punt-to-win style, but hasn't been used that much either. I mean, when you're putting up 42 points a game, you don't really need too much field position. And kicking has been, Barclay's been okay in 14 to 17 and, you know, has no trouble kicking them from 20 yards out. Is there anything that Iowa can probe there, or is this another game where the Hawkeyes are going to be, clearly, behind the eight ball when it comes to the special teams game?
Yeah, I think that the kick coverage unit is obviously still probably this team's Achilles heel. I mean, that's what deflated them against Wisconsin. That got them into some trouble and made a game that really, you know, from the one game I've been to this year was the Miami-Florida game, and that didn't even feel anywhere near as close as even the final score indicated, and a lot of that was just on the special team side of the ball. This team is just weirdly very un-Trestlian, been bad at kick coverage. The actual kick returns, I think they may be leading the league, if I remember reading that pretty recently, so they might be getting about 25 a touch on that side of the ball, but kick coverage is just atrocious. So if Iowa, you know, I don't know too much about you guys' special teams. If you have anybody that can possibly run the ball back, you're going to have a decent amount of success, I think, against this team.
Yeah, we got the league leader in kick return average. So
yeah, that'll do it then.
You already got one against you last year, though. We really can't do it 2 years in a row.
You say that, but this is a special year.
Is that a rule all of a sudden?
It took us 8 years to get that one. We can't do it back to back.
Oh, I see what you're doing. You're trying to reverse juju this one, aren't
you? That's exactly
what
I'm doing.
Reverse bugger jinx, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, Luke, how do you see this playing out? What's your prediction for Saturday?
Yeah, I know the Vegas spread is what, us minus three, and that's kind of how it played out last year. I'm going to just, you know, I've seen Iowa play a decent amount. I think that they're going to be fired up coming off of a loss. Although I think Ohio State won, you know, after the way they played against in the first half against Penn State, especially the secondary, which if there's a weakness besides the kick coverage team, it's probably the inconsistency of a fairly green safety unit, nothing else. The corners are pretty savvy and experienced, but I'll say that it's about a 6-point game. Ohio State probably wins. I won't be shocked if they don't win. I could see this just being that sort of game where we welcome our Rose Bowl representative, Michigan State, after Iowa wins. But hopefully, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping obviously against that, but I won't be shocked by a loss. I expect it to be really tight again. I don't see Ohio State rolling by any means.
Adam, what do you think?
Oh, I hate to make a prediction like this because it's completely against anything that's happened to Iowa since 2007, but I think this is going to be the first time since the our most hated rival wiped the floor with Iowa that the Hawkeyes lose by double digits. I think it'll be close, but we've seen so much evidence out of this defense that they can't play four quarters. They've done it once successfully, and that was against Penn State and Rob Bolden, which, I mean, hardly seems like a fair fight. But against any actual quarterback, they can't do it for four quarters, and Ohio State's going to be working on wearing them down from the very first snap. So I think that I ended up predicting 34-20, and I'll just take that. And it'll be close. It'll be fun to watch. It'll be a four-quarter game, but nobody's got way too much on offense to be beaten in this one.
Yeah, there are so many factors in this game to weigh that it becomes, I think, the toughest game of the year to predict. I mean, I was going to say it before Luke even said it, that what I've noticed from Ohio State this year is that they come out, I think it was a very good description, they come out clean on both sides of the ball, but they don't necessarily come out, the gorilla with a chainsaw for a penis that they usually are by the, you know, third quarter. and that gives Iowa the shot that they need at home where, you know, the one thing that they've done in the games they've won and won big against, you know, teams that were clearly inferior, and that even includes Michigan State in this case, is, you know, put it on them early and then just hold on for dear life.
They're not going to be able to do that, right?
I don't think they're going to be able to do that, no. But I think they might be able to build up enough of a lead that they can, you know, hold out in the fourth quarter. And the one thing that's been true so far, aside from the Wisconsin game, is that the real big fourth quarter collapses. And I wouldn't even classify Wisconsin as that because Iowa can put some points on the board in the fourth, too. Have been on the road, and they're a much better team at home. Oddly enough, this team plays like a young team. It plays really well at home and really incredibly awfully on the road. On the other hand, Ohio State's a juggernaut. Like, they probably haven't seen all year except for maybe Wisconsin. And we saw how that ended up. So I'm predicting 31-27 Ohio State, but I could see it turning into a two-touchdown game on Ohio State side, and I could see it turning into a, 4-7 point win for Iowa as well. I can't see more than that on Iowa's side. I don't think they win anything by more than a touchdown as it is, but, I guess strange things have happened in Iowa winning this game.
True. Like if an alien lands at the 50-yard line, that would be stranger than an actual win.
The ghosty guys are part of the halftime, maybe?
Hey, that's
say hello to the Iowa tribute to distended anuses. And then they just all do that.
All that happened, last year too, but those guys just missed the bus and ended up in Iowa City instead of Ames. They were supposed to be at the Iowa State game that weekend.
Of course.
Yes. And we've made a ghosty Iowa State joke. Well, Luke, we wish you the absolute worst of luck this week. And, may all of your players get, just temporarily injured in the next 4 days, and you have to play that one guy who has a name like Bowser from Mario Brothers.
Yeah, the feeling is mutual. I hope your Patriot quarterback gets, called to duty or something.
He's always called to duty. What you have to worry about with Iowa right now, and I'm not even kidding about this, we'll be talking about it probably tomorrow, is all of their players getting suspended for violating hunting rules.
is even that season? Like, I'm out of it on that.
We've got five wrestlers who are under investigation. We have one wrestler and one wrestling coach, and potentially more wrestlers, I suppose, who are under investigation for coon hunting out of season. I'm not even kidding.
I can't wait for like Stanzi to be under investigation for like drunkenly riding along in a helicopter, like shooting all eagles with a shotgun or something.
Hey. Helicopter rides!
Jeez. Yes.
With that.
All right, with that, boys. Well, Luke, we'll be talking to you hopefully this off season.
Pleasure, guys. Thank you.